And now for the gospel lesson, if you would please rise if you are able. We're going to read Matthew 14, 22 through 34. Right then, Jesus made the disciples get into the boat and go ahead to the other side of the lake while he dismissed the crowds. When he sent them away, he went up onto the mountain by himself to pray. Evening came and he was alone. Meanwhile, the boat, fighting a strong headwind, was being battered by the waves and was already far away from the land. Very early in the morning, he came to his disciples walking on the lake. When the disciples saw him walking on the lake, they were terrified and said, "It's a ghost." They were so frightened, they screamed. Just then, Jesus spoke to them, "Be encouraged. It's me. Don't be afraid." Peter replied, "Lord, if it's you, order me to come to you on the water." And Jesus said, "Come." Then Peter got out of the boat and was walking on the water toward Jesus. But when Peter saw the strong wind, he became frightened. As he began to sink, he shouted, "Lord, rescue me." Jesus immediately reached out and grabbed him, saying, "You man of weak faith, why did you begin to have doubts?" When they got into the boat, the wind settled down. Then those in the boat worshiped Jesus and said, "You must be God's son." When they had crossed the lake, they landed in Gennesaret.
This is the word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God. Please be seated. Every morning brings a new headline, a fresh worry, and a creeping sense that the world is shifting beneath our feet. From the rising costs and social tensions to the 24/7 news cycles that never rest, Americans are feeling it in our cores. Anxiety has become a part of our daily lives. Across the country, millions struggle with restless nights, racing thoughts, and a deep feeling of unease. We are among the most anxious human beings on the planet, a quiet reflection of the times we are living in. So thus began an article entitled "America the Anxious" from a recent edition of Psychology Today. And if those words aren't depressing enough, then consider these most recent findings. 3/4 of Americans report that they are worried about the future of our country. 70% of Americans report being highly anxious, not just anxious, but highly anxious about their personal finances. Over 1/2 of our population feels isolated and alone. 1 in every 5 adults have been diagnosed with an anxiety disorder, with millions more going undiagnosed and untreated. 34% of our youth and young adults are struggling with depression and or thoughts of suicide, and that number is growing. Now, I don't know about all of you. That frightens me. It frightens me because I find myself and those I love reflected in some of those numbers. It frightens me to know that so many people are struggling under such an unbearable load. And it frightens me because sooner or later I know that the world is going to collapse around them. And when it does, I'm scared there will be no one there to help them pick up the pieces because those around them are probably struggling too. It scares me. It really, really scares me. Does it scare any of you? If so, then please know that it's okay. It's understandable and even natural to feel scared and afraid. What isn't okay is when we allow those fears to control our lives. When we can't get past them, when they're always with us. So the question we need to ask ourselves are as Christians, what are we supposed to do when we find ourselves in that scary place? What does Christ invite us to do when we are afraid? That, my friends, is where today's gospel lesson has much to teach us, if only we look at it with new eyes and open our ears. Matthew tells us that, well, first remember my rule. Read what comes before and what comes after. And if you read before what Jenny just read, you'll learn that Jesus had learned about the death of his cousin, John the Baptizer. Now, for many of us, it's hard for us to remember that Jesus was fully human. We seem to think that he went through life and never felt anything, but the truth is he was human, and he felt everything that we feel. So when you find out that someone you love has just died, what goes through your mind? Do you just shrug your shoulders and go, oh, well, and go on with life? No, Jesus learned that his cousin had just been killed, ruthlessly killed. As a human, he wanted time to think. He wanted to be left alone. He needed time to process what had happened and to pray and to grieve. And in an attempt to get away from the crowd, a crowd that had been following him for several days, he got into a boat and he went to the other side. It was the Lake of Galilee, the Sea of Galilee, the Lake of Genesaret, whatever you want to call it. He got in the boat and he went to the other side. But as luck would have it, as luck always had it, someone saw him leave. And so, as unbelievable as it sounds, when he reached the other side that he thought would be deserted, he was greeted by a crowd that numbered around 5,000. So much for being alone. But we're told that in place of being angry or upset or put off, Jesus looked at the crowd and he had compassion for them. Despite what was going on in his own life, he saw them and he realized that some of them were ill. Many of them probably came wanting him to answer a question, and yes, some were there just simply because they wanted to hear what he had to say. But for whatever reason, Jesus put his own needs aside and he began to minister to that crowd. For the entire day, he responded to them. For an entire day, he met their needs. And when evening fell, he looked around and he said, "They're hungry." Five 5,000 people, a very tired Messiah. He fed them. 5 loaves of bread, 3 fish. And he fed them. Now don't forget, all the while, Jesus was grieving. His heart was breaking. His world, it was crumbling around him, just like ours do at times like that. He still wanted, he still needed just to be left alone. So after everyone had eaten their fill, he instructed the disciples to get back in the boat and go back across the lake to the very place they had just come from. And when he saw that the disciples had safely departed, he turned around to the crowd and he dismissed them. And finally, as he watched them walk away, he climbed the mountain and he took time to pray. But remember, the disciples were still on the lake. And at some point during the evening, a storm blew in. And it wasn't just any storm, it was a life-threatening storm. Matthew tells us it was a horrible storm. Waves were washing over them and they were filling their small boat with water. It wasn't bad enough. They were fighting a headwind. They couldn't move forward. They couldn't get backwards. They were fighting for their lives. Try to imagine what it was like to attempt to keep the boat upright while at the same time holding on to whatever you could so you didn't get washed overboard. Matthew tells us they were afraid. Hours. They had spent hours enduring the wind, the waves, and the darkness. They were exhausted and they were frightened. But their troubles didn't end there. At daybreak, now remember, they had been on the water since evening. And at daybreak, the storm was still raging. And at some point, they looked up and let out. Matthew says they screamed, but I can imagine it was a blood-curdling scream because what they saw was a ghost, and it was walking towards the boat. They were not only scared at that point, Matthew says they were terrified. And who wouldn't be? There was no way they could protect themselves. They couldn't turn around. The headwind was still there. The waves were still washing in their boat. They couldn't quit bailing water. They couldn't jump overboard. They couldn't swim. Suddenly, the crisis had become a catastrophe. Now, at this point, turn your attention to Peter. Do you remember what he did? Jesus calls out, "Don't be afraid, it's me." And the moment Peter realized it was actually Jesus, not a ghost, he cried out, "Lord, if it's you, order me to come to you on the water." Now think about that. If you had been Peter and you suddenly realized that Jesus was on the water walking towards you, what would be your first impulse? Would you look at him and say, "Hey, dude, that looks like fun. Can I get out of the boat and do it too?" Or would you say something more like, "Finally, Lord, where have you been? Would you get in the boat, please, and save us?" we're honest, I think we would have to admit that when we are in a real crisis, when the circumstances surrounding us are overwhelming and we're scared or maybe even terrified, what we want is for Jesus to come to us. We want him to get in the boat, to sit down beside us and show us a way out of the mess that we're in. But what does Peter do? He looks at Jesus and he calls out, "Lord, if it's really you, order me to come to you." Do you see what he did? He just flipped the way we normally respond. He just flipped what we normally ask of Jesus. He turned it around. In place of asking Jesus to come to him, he wanted to go towards Jesus. And the only way he could do that was to do what Jesus was doing. "Lord, if it is you, tell me to come to you." And that, my friends, that's what we have to do too. When our world becomes overwhelming and we find ourselves drowning in a sea of fear, we have to be willing to go to where Jesus is. We have to be willing to do what Jesus does. We can't sit there passively saying, "Okay, Lord, come save me." We have to get out of the boat. According to Father Michael Renninger, when we're frightened and overwhelmed, then we, like Peter, quote, "can make a Christ-centered decision that fear is not going to control us, exhaustion is not going to constrain us, and darkness is not going to dictate our behavior. We do not have to hide passively in the boat, waiting for Jesus to show up and jump in. We can listen when Jesus says, 'Come.'" Renninger then goes on to say that for Peter, doing what Jesus did meant getting out of the boat and walking on the water towards him. When we find ourselves in an equally frightening situation, we have to be willing to do the same. We must be willing to draw nearer to Jesus by doing what he is doing. We have to be willing to look at what he did and pattern ourselves after him. Renninger says that most of us may find that what we actually need to do is forgive. Perhaps we need to respect those who are different from us so that we can finally sit down and see them not as enemies, but as someone we can learn from, someone that we can listen to, someone who's a fellow human being created in the very image of God that we are. Could it be that for some of us to become more like Jesus, to draw closer to him rather than expecting him to draw closer to us, that what we need to do is pray for and even love our enemies? Because it is only in loving our enemies that Christ's love can grow between us. How do we break the power of fear? How do we keep it from controlling our lives? We do what Jesus did. We do whatever is necessary, even and most especially in the midst of our fear. We get up and we walk towards him rather than expecting him to make the whole journey towards us. And when we move forwards, when we move towards him, we will find the power to do what we need to do. So when you find yourself surrounded by fear, when you're being called upon to face storms that are just a part of life, remember Peter. He got out of the boat so he could move towards Jesus. He faced the storm by doing what Jesus was doing. And he only got in trouble when he took his eyes off of Jesus and looked at the storm. So Christians, stop looking at the storm. Look at Jesus and do whatever he tells you to do. Get out of the boat and go to him. To God be the glory. And all God's children say, amen.